Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We are joined by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. And of course, at that beautiful, beautiful new site with the new design, acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, it's great to be chatting with you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. By the way, if you want to get past some of those ads, if you log in, it's better. So,
all right.
That's a heads up. Yeah, man. I think I just told you before we got on air, it was pencils down time for me at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. at some point on, I guess that would have been Monday, technically. Yep. That's when I got done with watching every single snap, trying to analyze it. I have entirely too many spreadsheets open right now, trying to track who the heck is playing special teams and stuff like that, because I am a sick bastard about that. We've literally been, Andy, you and I have been in multiple Twitter DMs together, not initiated by us, where people are debating whether Travis Glover is or is not eligible to come back to the 53-man roster at some point this year. Buddy, football season is fucking back. Pardon my French, but
you are so right. You are unbelievably right. It is absolutely back. I am so glad that it is back. And yes, that is the type of sicko conversations that multiple people had the idea of, like, you know who would want to be involved in this conversation? Justice and Andy about a potential Travis Glover being able to come back. Goody has a press conference on early Tuesday morning. Usually I'm able to get there. I am not able to get there on Tuesday morning. Otherwise we could solve this just by me asking, but I did reach out to Wes, and one of the things I really hate doing is putting any pressure on anybody else to ask. Everyone's got their own things that they're trying to ask or whatever. So I literally hate hey, ask this question. But I just said to Wes, I'm like, hey, if you are bored tomorrow at Goody's presser and really want to get into the minutia of stuff, there's been multiple conversations today about potentially getting Travis Glover back if you want to ask that question to Goody. So he said he would, you're potentially think about it at least. We'll see if it actually happens. And again, a lot of the time, other things come up when you're in the room, but maybe we'll get an actual response from Goody. The other thing is, even if he is, he might have an actual season ending shoulder injury too. We don't know the extent of the actual injury, where even if he is eligible to come back, he might be done for the year anyway. We don't know at this point.
Yeah, I just don't know what the clarity on the rules is, because we've gotten screenshots of what the exact wording is, and
I can't make
it's not clear. No.
not at all.
Shout out to the lawyers for writing super unclear stuff. Yeah. There was a football game though.
There was. All right. Before we get into the sick details that you and I are about to jump into with this entire thing, just overarching, how did you feel as you were watching the game? Not even getting into the tape yet. Not even as you're going through and reviewing everything. Just watching the game. What mattered to you? What didn't matter? Anything you were actually frustrated by, or was it just whatever?
The drops. I had the audio going on. I'm not gonna lie, I started charting during the game. So I had two screens up, and then I was screen recording on one, and then was trying to figure out special teams personnel immediately. And I do the first team, every week that the Packers do anything. I've been doing this for 4 years now. Family night, any of the preseason games, if the starters get in, I track the first team snaps, because I find that that's really valuable for roster construction. We're about to be debating the 53-man roster for the next 3 weeks, right? So I always find that valuable, and I think people find that valuable too. So I try to get that out ASAP. Was not paying super close attention after the starters got off of the field. So that would have been three drives in total, right? The defense got one, the offense got two. But the drops, man, the drops. oh my God, dude, so much of this would have looked so much better if not the drops. Like one of the more interesting things, when I was watching the defensive film, I was like, damn, the defense is actually playing pretty good. Like there were some obvious mess ups in the first drive. We could talk about that. I went through like play by play, the entire, you know, the offense's first two drives, the defense's only drive with the first team. And I wrote like the play by play and like things that are correctable, things that are like actually concerns, stuff like that up on APC. But when I watched the defense, like front to back, I was like, the defense is actually playing really good. Andy, do you know when the defense surrendered their second touchdown?
Was it early second half? Because the second one was the fumble, right? So the fumble for the touchdown. The first one was Fields, then fumble for a touchdown. I don't know. Was it early second half? When was the next one? I don't even recall the next one.
So the next one was 6 minutes left in the third quarter.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a blitz look against a screen. Like, it's just, you know, you got,
oh yeah, the screen
with your pants down a little bit.
Yeah, just a perfect perfect time to call that screen against that blitz.
The second team defense was honestly pretty lights out. And I think people, you know, the feeling coming out of that game, right, is obviously like we were down a billion points the entire game. How is it possible that the defense was playing that well? Well, we had a sack fumble touchdown early on, right? And then after that, there was a muff punt inside the 10. They held that to a field goal.
Yep.
Right. So I think some of that gets lost. Once the fours came in, buddy, all bets are off. Some of those guys just got here. A lot of them are not good. Isaiah Dunn never needs to play a snap of football for my team.
Well, and he had an injury at practice that I think is, yeah, it was non-contact. I know that much. I just saw
all the tweets were just, yeah, he's out, and then no further information about that. I'm like, that can't be good.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm not allowed to say here. All I know, it happened right in front of me. I'll just put it that way. And I could, yeah, like, it wasn't, by the way, I don't think this was anything where like he like tore his Achilles. He wasn't like down right away or anything like that. I don't think it was anything that severe. And again, don't want to you know, speculate on any of it, but definitely happened right in front of me. And definitely, like, he immediately knew and went to the Don Hutson Center right away. And then it immediately, yeah, came back that he's out with a knee injury. So yeah, rough for Isaiah Dunn. That obviously sucks no matter what, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Fourth team defense, pretty bad. Outside of that, honestly, pretty good. There's some mess ups on just like general communication stuff. I think Halfley talked about it a little bit too. Like the Isaiah Simmons clip, triple platinum on Twitter.com right now, right? Like everyone is like, what the hell is he doing? So what he's trying to do there is robot a crosser. That sounds goofy. It's roll, what is it? Roll back and out is, yep, what robot is supposed to stand for. It's basically, you know, you see it a lot with like boot action and stuff like that, play action. And he saw play action on that play. And basically what you're doing is, Andy, if there's a crosser coming behind me and I need to cover that crosser and that guy is going full speed, it's hard for me to cover that thing going behind my head when I'm looking at you. So my job is to actually turn around, find that thing and cut it off. And there's a lot of film of, you know, like you just go on to Twitter, hit the search, type in like robot crosser. You're going to find a bunch of clips and like a bunch of football nerds being like, you know, look at Anthony Barr doing this at 250 pounds. This is crazy, right? The problem is Simmons did not check to make sure that there was nothing underneath coming before he tried to robot the crosser. And I don't even know if he needed to robot it because, I mean, Keyshawn was in his hip pocket there. That's something that can get fixed with like literally a sentence.
One look at,
right?
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like quick conversation about that. You know, Simmons hasn't been a full-time linebacker for that long. Right. I mean, in Arizona, they try to play around with him as like this slot safety type of guy. No one really committed to him being a full-time linebacker before he came to Green Bay. So you have to remember he's still, from an experience at the position standpoint, still a young guy. There was the third down conversion. Cause I think the defensive drive started. It's two runs for like 5 yards, right? Okay. That's a win. Halfley calls an exotic coverage, bang bang play with Isaiah McDuffie at the first down marker. McDuffie gets pushed a little bit because he's not a very big guy, right? They gave up a first down. Okay, whatever. You had that play action play. The underneath to Andrew Beck. You have the explosive run where Zane Anderson gets hurt. I think that's the most concerning one of all of them. Javon Bullard has a wide open gap that he's staring down that entire time and just does not hit it. He's supposed to make that play, you know, basically at the line of scrimmage. He doesn't make contact until they're 11 yards downfield, right? Huge red flag for me.
Yeah.
And then the touchdown, because they forced it to a 3rd and 5, I think, because they gave up a carry. So there was the play action play, right? It gets into the red zone. It's a 3-yard run, a 2-yard scramble. It's 3rd and 5. Then you get a play call that will never happen in a regular season game, which is Justin Fields runs a 4-3. You're playing cover one. So it's man coverage across the board. Defenders and all 5 guys in coverage are supposed to have their back to the quarterback, right? You're not supposed to peel off, nothing like that at all. You get a tackle twist on the inside. So the tackles, you know, hey, yep. You're a nose tackle. You're lining up in the A gap. You shoot the A gap. You're in the B gap. You shoot the B gap. Well, they line up in those gaps, but then they cross over, right? You're hoping the pressure gets there. If not, a lane splits down the middle. Again, one reason why I say this never gets called in a regular season game, cover one almost never gets called on the red zone, especially inside the 10. Because that really what you're doing, you're playing man coverage and you're playing that post safety. Andy, no one's throwing a post when you're also, you know, the back line of the end zone is a defender, right? Who's throwing a post? So they're running a coverage that you're not really going to get against a really fast guy. And then, you know, hey, pass rush doesn't get home. Field steps up. It's, you know, basically a foot race between Keyshawn Nixon and Ketanji Ladapo and Fields. Fields can roll out of bed and run a 4-3, scampers to the end zone untouched. Isaiah McDuffie maybe has a chance to make that play, but the running back is faking like he's catching a ball in the corner of the end zone to keep his eyes brought in there. And McDuffie's not going to turn his eyes around in man coverage if he's seeing that. Like, I saw some people saying, like, they got to communicate better. No, it's man coverage. This is what you're supposed to be doing in man coverage. Because if Fields breaks out of the pocket and Isaiah McDuffie stops covering that running back for even a yard, you're playing monkey in the middle, baby. You're coming at me. I'm throwing it to him. Like, you're in no man's land. Sorry. So I'm not too worried about the defensive drive. The Bullard thing sticks out to me. Offensively, I think the tackles, you know, Belton, Jordan Morgan looked a lot more comfortable out there than they did on family night. I take that as a positive. Obviously, Jacob Monk had his issues. I think two holdings in pass protection, one at center, one at guard. And then he also got a holding on an Amar Johnson carry that went for like 10 yards.
Yep.
R. Johnson actually, like, you look at the box score and you're like, wow, he's definitely the best player in this game. He had two explosives taken back. Yep. He had the swing screen. I think it was a receiver who got called on the swing screen for holding. I think Shepherd. That one was like 15. And then he had the one that got taken back for 10 too because of Monk. So Monk, not a great day. Amar Johnson, definitely a good day. Overall, I think the defense did fine. Offensively, good God, the drops. I thought it was funny that Halfley brought up in his presser or someone asked him about, you know, all the punch outs and stuff, right? Because I even saw that on family night. Family night, the guys are punching out the ball against their teammates. And then you get in the preseason game.
Nobody.
I don't think I saw a punch out at all. And he was like, yeah, that is a
big trend problem.
Yeah. So shout out to the Colts. High and tight. 5 points of contact. You're going to need it this week because I'm sure they're going to be trying to punch that thing out. So
It was somebody asked me about like that on one of, I think the post game live show or something, like, where was all the punch outs? And I'm like, I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch it. Cause I'm like, I don't recall seeing it either. Yeah. And it was every play at practice, every play at family night, like it is there. And then it just,
I saw it at family night. I was like, okay, they're not playing around about this. Like they're
weird. That it just like disappeared. I don't know if like they just forgot and like the heat of the moment. It was such a weird thing. Like some of it, like there weren't a ton of plays where you had a huge opportunity for it, but still to not get it at all was very, very weird. All throughout the course of the night. I want to go back to the end zone play though. So I want you to ask me this. Cover one in the end zone play. You never call. Why call it in that situation, Justice?
To get reps. I mean, maybe you didn't get enough man with the first team and you want to see if they'll actually cover it, right? I will say, as far as man coverage goes, all the routes were covered. McDuffie probably had the easiest responsibility, and he's probably the guy you're worried the most about in that situation. Because, you know, the running back basically like checked through the offensive line and then ran basically what turns into like a drag out of the backfield, right? And then he turned it up to the corner of the end zone once he saw the play was breaking down. I think McDuffie is the guy that you're worried the most about in man coverage from like a liability standpoint. But the Packers covered the routes. Pass rush didn't get home. Then it's just, you're in cover one in the red zone and Justin Fields is quarterback. Like that's not getting called in a real game. There were a couple things like that. Like, I think it was the second offensive drive. I think this was the play before the Love sack. That was the last play for the first team. And it's they're faking the jet, right? And then it's an inside handoff. That's supposed to be, you're supposed to influence that backside edge defender, whether it's a end or outside linebacker, right? And that guy's supposed to, stand still basically because he has to respect the jet. That guy doesn't respect it. He just, full speed ahead. I'm taking the running back. I think it goes for like a 2 yard carrier or something like that. In a 60 minute scouted NFL game. Next series, you're probably calling the jet and you're probably getting 20 yards out of it, right? If you can get the blocks on the perimeter. But this wasn't that. The offense got two drives, right? So and I don't know how much they're caring about play calling. Steno's calling plays, but he's calling them from the field, right? He's not in the box, I don't think.
That I don't know the answer to. I did not keep track of where Steno was. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
So I don't know. Like, again, just these are unscouted looks, folks. This is what we're watching as a game of violent battleship. And I think some of these things, I mean, I guess there's nuance to it, right? Like, some of these things aren't big deals, like any of the like, oh, this was a bad call, right? Touchdown, you get caught in a blitz on a screen, right? That's a bad call. Cover one in inside the 10 against Justin Fields at quarterback. That's a bad call. The jet play, you probably adjust to that in game, right? But like drops, that's a problem. But outside of drops and Jacob Monk not keeping his hands to himself, right? I it's hard for me to really see the like common thread between a lot of the issues that they had.
I'm right there with you, and I've said it obviously a lot on the shows already, so I don't need to dive into it too more. Let me even ask you this before, like, not even this game. If maybe they won by 50, they lose by 50. How do you view what do you want to go into a preseason game taking away, if anything? Like, what how do you feel NFL teams are utilizing preseason games, and what should a general viewer of said game really be looking for, if any, like of anything importance of in a preseason game?
I think it's a fact-finding mission more than anything, right? Where it's like, okay, what do we need to fix? What haven't we figured out? How do these guys react when it is actually live bullets? It's full contact football. We're going to learn a lot of things that we didn't learn from these guys in a practice situation, right? Stuff like that. I don't think that there is like large overarching things that you want to learn. Like, you don't go into a game and you're like, we're going to figure this thing out, especially the way the Packers do it. Like, there's been times, like, I'm thinking about, like, the first Jordan Love preseason where they were running their install stuff, but, like, their offense looked super different from game to game. And it's because they were doing way different things. Like, they would do, you know, their split back stuff in one game. They would do their stuff where they motion a guy into the I formation in another. Like, they're not going into this thing with a loaded deck, right? From like a play calling standpoint, they're really just trying to get base calls and, you know, do the bat, you know, violent battleship thing that I was talking about, and then adjust, right? It's to figure out where you need to adjust, figure out where guys are at personnel wise. Like, the Packers ran a ton of, they basically got into a 3-4 front with 4-3 personnel in this game.
I saw that.
I don't know if that's going to be their plan moving forward. Like, they've done things like this in the past where it's like, okay, we're going to run a bunch of X in preseason one and then not really give any of those looks in preseason game two and three, right? And we'll sprinkle it in during the regular season, but that's not what our defense is going to look like every week. Basically what they did, they call it reducing. So you're basically kicking in
LVN,
Lucas Van Ness, into an interior, you know, he's playing inside shade of the tackle. And then Isaiah Simmons was actually the linebacker who walked up to the line and basically played like a 3-4 outside linebacker. I think that worked out pretty well for LVN. The problem is they try to do it with other guys like Baron Sorrell. And I thought Baron Sorrell did really well as like an actual, well, not really. I mean, he did pretty well as an actual edge defender. Like, there was one time he would have gotten the sack if he didn't slip. That's another thing that we didn't talk about. Edging Cooper on that first drive, there was one play action play. He falls on all fours because it's wet and it's Lambeau Field. And that's what happens. The surface is slippery. But Baron Sorrell almost got a sack. And then I think that same drive on third down, he gets a quarterback hit on an incompletion. He did pretty well when he was on the edge, but they try to reduce him a couple times and he got washed and, you know, pushed off the ball so far on some of these double teams that like the linebacker couldn't scrape over him and actually like get into the gap that he was supposed to be playing. So as far as the 3-4 stuff, I'm cool with it if Van Ness is the guy reducing, and I don't think that there's another defensive end on this team who can play that technique. So I hope to not see anyone other than Van Ness play that in the regular season.
All right. Fair enough. Not Colin Oliver. You don't want Colin Oliver kicking inside to.
Does he exist at this point?
No, I don't know. We're in Zane Anderson territory here a little bit. No, I don't know what's going on with him. He still is working to the side today. Hopefully he can get back sooner rather than later. But yeah, it's definitely so disappointing.
So weird, because the opening press conference, right, of training camp, dude said there's two long-term injuries on this team. It's Christian Watson with the ACL, and John Williams is dealing with this back injury. Those two are two of the only three guys still on the Packers injury list. But then there's Colin Oliver, who's been on the injury list for 3 weeks with a hamstring injury. So
it gets even sort of weirder, because so as you know, Colin Oliver was out for a huge chunk of the season, then played in the Senior Bowl and kind of did everything, you know, at that, and was like, so I think kind of deemed like good to go. Rookie minicamp. No, it like, let me be very clear here. Rookie minicamp was hardly anything more than an orientation, right? Like, there was very little going on. It was like an orientation going through like the warmups and Taylor Algersma basically doing like a tryout. Like, that was what rookie minicamp was. But he was doing all the stuff with all the rest of the rookies. He was doing like the warmup drills and everything like that, and didn't seem to be limited in any capacity or anything like that. And then, you know, mini camp comes along, OTAs come along, and he's out, training camp, he's out. And as you said, Goody doesn't say anything long-term. Yeah, here we are. And there are differences in sort of like rehab groups and like players returning from injury. So for example, there are some players that are not out there doing any work really whatsoever, like not with like the initial rehab group. that's got, like, Colin Oliver is kind of in that group. Those are usually the ones that are kind of further away. There's ones that are not doing anything, like Travis Glover, for example. Obviously, that's a totally different thing. Then there's some that are like either staying inside or not exactly with the rehab group, but you can tell they're further away. Then there's like the rehab group, which is today was like Xavier McKinney, Jalen White, a couple other guys in there, Zane Anderson, etc. Those are kind of the next tier up. Then you have guys that are actually like in pads and kind of like observing and going through some things. Quay Walker did that for a while. Like he was almost like going through, but he wasn't actually involved in anything. Then the next step up from that is just doing individual work. And then the step up from that is doing individual in some team. And then after that, you're pretty much full go. Colin Oliver's still kind of back of that line where he's not even with the rehab group yet. And it seems like he's getting ready to come back. So it's a weird circumstance. I should mention, it doesn't always follow that protocol. Obviously, everything can be a little bit different depending on the injury, but it kind of feels like that's sort of the pecking order of kind of injuries. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, preseason football is already underway and college football is here, so do not miss any of the action this season on Prize Picks. An absolute blast winning last year on Prize Picks, and now I'm gearing up for another epic run in 2025. I've already got a couple deep sleepers in mind, and I'm going to be very, very high on Tucker Kraft this upcoming season as well. Now, you may be new to Prize Picks, so let's break it down super easy. Prize Picks is incredibly simple to play. You just pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in and win up to 2,000 times your money. That's why Prize Picks already has millions of users, because it's the best place to win cash while watching sports. And there's never been a better time to sign up than today. So download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this the other day because I was trying to like explain to people some of the things on the 53 and the way that it has to go. And that's really why I started doing the big nerdy write-ups about special team stuff. Right.
Yep.
But there are like pressure points on this roster. Right. I think one of them right now is defensive end. Colin Oliver hasn't been on the field. Is he going to make the 53? If you're a defensive end on this team, you almost have to contribute on special teams, right? Rich Bisaccia loves to play defensive ends on special teams. Basically, the entire punt block unit is like defensive ends or linebackers. He'll play them at punt protection, right? You'll use them on kickoffs, stuff like that. Lucas Van Ness, Aaron Mosby, Kingsley and Igbare, all three of them, even though, you know, at least two, you know, Igbare and Lucas Van Ness were getting significant snaps on the defensive side of the ball last year, right? All three of them were top 7 played players on the special, like overall special teams. Brent Cox was 39th. Mosby started, I think Mosby got in, Mosby was 4 core. So he started on all 4 major special teams unit. It was, you know, punt return, kickoff return.
Yep.
Brent Cox, 0. They used him as a rotational punt rusher, right?
Yeah. And,
you know, stuff like that. This preseason game, they didn't play a lot of the guys that they usually would. Like, obviously, you guys see, like, Keyshawn didn't return kicks and stuff like that, right? But, like, they use a lot of starters on special teams. They didn't do that in this game at all. And I don't blame him for that. Like Xavier, I don't think people realize this. Xavier McKinney's like an every down kickoff guy for them. He plays the one. So like if you're counting outside in, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he plays the one for him. And obviously he was injured and stuff like that. But that's I'm just trying to show you guys an example of like a starter playing a key spot. Tucker Kraft a lot of times will play like the wing and on punt team. Like that little shield and stuff like that. Aaron Mosby got 3 starts on core 4. He played I think, is he 13 or 15 special team snaps? Brent Cox got one snap on special teams. Like that, that's the hurdle Brent Cox has to make the roster. It's going to be, can we use this guy in any facet on special teams? Because over several years, Bisaccia has loved defensive ends, and he has gone out of his way to not put Brent Cox in those looks. And even with those starters out of the lineup, you would think Brent Cox, okay, now here's your time to get a bunch of reps on special teams and stuff like that. They didn't give him those. So how do you have that in Brent Cox and then also have the question mark with Colin Oliver going into this 53, right? Like that's a pressure point on this team, especially if you're not going to keep that sixth linebacker, if you're not going to keep that fourth tight end, that, you know, similar body types to these defensive ends in these special teams roles. Like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how all this stuff unfolds. If I'm Oliver, though, I'm like, I got to get on the field.
I actually think it might be the opposite. I think Green Bay at this point just says you're starting just the season on pup. Yeah, because he's on pup. So if you take him off, then you can't, you know this obviously, but right. You can't put him back on PUP. I think we're probably to the point where, I mean, if it's not this week where he can like go, I don't think you rush him back. And
he's,
I think
he's not going to rep, because if you're a DN on this team, you're going to be activated. You're going to need to be playing, like, especially if you're a backup, like you got to start at like three different spots on special teams in week one. And like, time is ticking, man. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you can redshirt him, that solves an issue, right?
Or just even like by the time to where we don't want to waive him. We don't want to activate him, right? We don't want to activate him and then get him ready for a week. And then like, you know, now he either has to make the team or we have to waive him. So now you're putting a 53 man spot on him just because he's a fifth round pick, probably not going to play him. Now you're redshirting him on the 53. Whereas if you just keep him on the pup list, you get to redshirt him kind of as long as at least you want to. And then once you decide, like, cause he's going to be out those first four games then. And then after that, you get what, like a 3 week ramp up period to kind of get him back involved. That gives you the 4 weeks for him to kind of continue to study and learn. And then a 3 week acclimation period after that, if you want to bring him back at that point. So to me, if it's not activated, like again, this week, I think you just hold on him, make sure that he can stay on the pup list when you do cutdowns, basically giving you an extra roster spot, and then figure that out down the road once he's ready.
Yeah, if they can swing that, I think that makes a lot of sense. Deion's going to be really interesting because, again, like Kingsley and Brenton Cox are both high-quality backups at this point at the NFL level. But Cox doesn't play special teams, and you added two more guys, two mid-round pick rookies at the position. And Aaron Mosby already like is playing a ton of snaps for you. So if you get rid of Mosby, like where are the snaps coming from? Is it coming from a linebacker? Or is it coming from a tight end? Isaiah Simmons isn't really playing linebacker spots on special teams. They're having him gun punts, which means he's not working in punt protection, even in practice, right? So like these roster numbers are getting wonky. They're getting wonky. That's why like anytime I see the like mock 53s and they're like, yeah, we're going to keep six defensive tackles. In no world are they going to keep six. I'll eat this hat live on stream. I swear to God, I'll do it thread by thread if they keep six defensive tackles. There's no way that they're going to be able to do it with this roster.
I think they keep six defensive tackles.
It's not happening. The one of the funny things too, like, so Stackhouse was in rotationally starting with the second team guys. He wasn't a starter. Kobe Witten and Carl Brooks both got looks over him. Warren Brinson got more looks with like the second team than Stackhouse did. But Stackhouse like almost exclusively played in like short yard situations, which I thought was really interesting. It was something I think PFF had it. It was like 18 of 26 reps that he had were against the run. And that's including when he was actually in there as like an every down player with the fourth team, right? But before that, he was basically just in situationally as like a run stuffer, like the Braylon Allen stuff on that fourth and short, right? He was in there with the second team. He was in there with Welch and Kingsley and Agbari and Kobe Wooden and all those other guys. But they really used him as like this role player more than as like, yeah, you're our, you know, you're on the third line of the depth chart at defensive tackle.
Who are you cutting of the six? Just Stackhouse?
I don't even know if you got to cut Stackhouse. Like, if you want to use him as like your short yardage guy, go for it. Like, that's.
But then who are you cutting if you're not keeping six?
One of the Georgia guys. I don't get it. It's, you know, Dark Knight, Joker, pool stick. Like, break that thing in half. Whoever survives, survives.
Here's where I agree with you, and here's where I disagree with you. I agree with you when it comes to the roster math that keeping the six defensive tackles is tough to do. I think sometimes you get to the point of it has less to do with what's your best roster from like a game day standpoint, and it's more to do of like which guys you don't either want to maybe subject to waivers or actually just want to keep on the 53, and you can figure out some of the other stuff with practice squad call-ups. Like let's say it gets to this, right? Let's say it comes down to one of the Georgia D tackles or Aaron Mosby as the extra defensive end, right? I don't think there's much question to me that Mosby probably has more value as like a guy that you can use on special teams, be a rotational defensive end. You're going to get more out of that guy on game day. I have zero concern about Aaron Mosby getting claimed if I release him on cutdown time. I have a little bit more concern when it comes to Stackhouse and Brinson, if one of those guys could potentially get claimed by one of the crappy teams in the league, right? That's going to have a high waiver priority. So that would worry me more. And then I just kind of wonder if, all right, can I get Mosby and can I find another Mosby on another from another team that I can also put on the practice squad that I just bought myself 6 weeks of calling up those guys that I need to. And then we can figure out as injuries hit later and one of my defensive tackles inevitably goes down with an injury. All right, now I've still got five. I call up Mosby to the active and go from there, whatever it may be. I just think that initial one is more of a game of who do I not want to get claimed and less to do with how do I put together the best roster for Detroit. And then you kind of make it work during the week with call-ups and whatnot. But we can disagree on it. That's totally within the
realm. I get that, but you still only get 48 on game day.
Yeah.
So
all right.
That's going to be the tough thing to me, especially like depending on what's happening at corner too. Like this is what I was saying, like, you know, or not corner, defensive back, with all the injuries that are there. I know Haddon just came back today and stuff, but
yep.
They're going to be short on numbers at a lot of special teams spots specifically. And that's where you get into a weird spot. And it's like, all right, are we going to have Savion Williams be on the kick return team as a blocker? Cool. But I don't want to hear it when, you know, our returns are only coming out to the 20. Right.
It's very, very fair. Like I said, I think your overall roster construction is right. I don't disagree with that at all. I think if you're getting ready for Detroit, you probably want those guys rather than a Stackhouse or something like that.
Yeah, because I think, like at tight end, I don't think they should keep more than the three. Because totally Ben Sims, the only special teams he started on last year was kickoff return as a blocker, right? I don't think there's just not enough juice to squeeze out of that.
If there's a fourth tight end, it's somebody that's not on the roster right now. If you told me there's 453 guys, I think they claim somebody like they did with Ben Sims in the past. I think it's somebody else.
Yeah. So you get that situation. Linebacker is weird because you might only need to keep five with the Oliver situation, right? You probably should only keep five, honestly, like from watching these guys. You probably should only keep five. But Isaiah Simmons isn't getting any of these linebacker, tight end, DN spots on special teams. So now you're down two guys on special teams at that same body type that you would have had before. And then we're talking about defensive end with the whole Colin Oliver, Brent Cox thing. They got Sorrell a ton of snaps on special teams. Sorrell probably led the team in overall snaps in the Jets game. Just how many plays he played on defense and special teams combined, he probably led the team. But yeah, it's just a lot of weird pressure points that are all coming at the same spot in the third phase of football. And it's just like, all right, something's.
What if I get down to five wide receivers?
Well, you kind of need Heath on the kick return team already.
All right.
Like, you already need to have him as a blocker. Like, you need to have Corey Ballantyne come in, and he's the lead blocker on your kickoff return team. He's the guy who's back there with Keyshawn.
Don't we have like five Bo Meltons for all this stuff? Isn't there like multiple Bo Meltons that we can just use everywhere for all this?
I wish. But they didn't play Bo on special teams at all. I think they're just saving him to get
focusing him on defense.
Yeah, I'm like that. I'm totally not worried about that. He was the starting gunner on punt team on family night, and he didn't get like any reps there, you know, in the first preseason game. But yeah, it's a lot of weird, interesting things with just the pressure points. Like, running back's another one, right? Where it's like Marshawn Lloyd and Emmanuel Wilson. Those are probably the guys that you want to give the ball to behind Josh Jacobs. Those guys play like zero special team snaps for you. And Chris Brooks is a blocker on the offense, gives you a little bit of a different dynamic. He's also like does everything on special teams. Like, I don't think you can afford to lose that guy.
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah. So drop the mic. Yeah, just a lot of weird things.
Chris Brooks isn't going anywhere. Mic drop. Like, you're not losing that guy. Mic drop. Yeah. All right. Give me some other any other interesting snap counts, like not even necessarily special teams, but anything interesting from like a snap count standpoint that you noticed?
With the first team units, not really. Malik Heath is like way out snapping Mecole Hardman.
Just on that for a second, that has been very much the case all throughout the course of training camp as well. Like, if snap counts are any indication, and if how much time they get with the ones is any indication whatsoever, I mean, Malik Heath is so far ahead of Mecole Hardman at this point, it's crazy. So I know that that's kind of the constant discussion of, is it Heath or is it Hardman? Man, if it's just based on that, Heath is ridiculously ahead of Mecole Hardman at this point.
Yeah, like, I think we talked about this a little bit before, where it's like Mecole Hardman's win condition is he has to by far win the punt return job. And he did not help himself. No. He did not help himself on Saturday at all. It's funny because, like, fans just do not remember what, like, a rotation at the return position looks like. They're like, why doesn't he just, like, fair catch these things? Why is he trying to make a play? Because he's trying to make the roster.
I said this.
We lived through Christian Michael.
I
got to show coach something. I got to show coach something. Because you're not going to make this team make it fair catches.
I have no issue with him in a preseason game going for both of those plays. I have none whatsoever. Like, I'm not going to blame. If we're taking it inside the five, absolutely, man. Go for it. Like, even, like, worst case there, by the way, like, if he gets pinned inside the five, you know what Matt probably doesn't hate seeing? How does my team respond inside the five-yard line? It doesn't matter at all. Like, I have no issue with that. I also have no issue with him trying to catch it on the bounce and go make a play. That's how he makes the team. That's, like, the only way to make the team. I have zero issues with either of those decisions in a preseason game. In a regular season game, I have quite a bit of umbrage in both of those decisions. In a preseason game, go do it. Like, go have fun. Go try to make a play. He did not do either of those things, though, and both ended up being big mistakes, specifically the muff.
Yeah. And again, Hardman's a vested veteran. So if he makes this team in week one, his contract fully guarantees. A lot of these, I guess what we perceive as anxiety, right? The willing to take risks, stuff like that, probably goes away with that. But until roster cutdowns, buddy, it is all or nothing. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Hardman does some weird stuff again.
No doubt.
Next week. Like, what do you have to lose?
If he doesn't get another punt return, right? Like, if he doesn't get another chance at a punt return, he's just gone. Like, he needs like one, maybe two Desmond Howard moments in order to make this team. If there's a ball that bounces at like the three and he can scoop that thing, that dude is scooping that thing a million times out of a million again. Like, unless they like specifically told him, you catch it inside the five again and you're cut. Like, outside of that, like, he's catching it.
Yeah. This is what it's like, buddy. This is what it's like with the roster bubble guys. I got to show coach something.
All right. That's the interesting snap counts. Any other weird special team stuff that, as you were charting special teams, of like, hey, keep an eye on this player because they're on a billion special teams units?
I don't think that there's stuff that's super important for, because so many guys who they would have used were out. Christian Welch, I thought, by far had the best night special teams wise opening kickoff, just completely dirt naps a guy, like complete and total pancake on the opening kickoff. Sorrell got called for a holding penalty on that one, by the way. And then on punt team, I think this was because they had Simmons out there a lot, gunning punts, but the Jets called double vice. So it's, I mean, think about it as like a true double team. Like literally there's a guy on your outside shoulder, a guy on your inside shoulder. They're just trying to press the hell out of you. They want to make sure you're not going to go make that play downfield on the punt. So they were doing that from a coverage standpoint, the Jets were, right? So what does that do? Well, you have fewer guys in the box, right? So you're not really going to be rushing the punt. And the guys who are in protection and then have to go field that punt downfield, right? There's less mess for them to walk through as they go down. I think Christian Welch made like three tackles on four punts or something like that. Did really well there. I think on the defensive side, still more to be wanted. I think he's not as quick as he used to be, and that's going to hurt him in terms of making this roster. I don't think that they need to keep more than the top five linebackers. I think Hopper's taken a really big step on the defensive side too, as someone who has, like, you know, I was a card carrying non-believer.
Yeah, you shorted that stock. You shorted that stock a long time ago.
I did. I've been selling it, and now I would like to buy some back because Hopper looks like he's a real football player this year. Last year, he basically just played special teams for the Packers, had a pretty tough summer, had some, you know, rough film at Missouri, even though he was a pretty good athlete, but he's kind of taken a step. Ketan Oladapo, I thought, played well on special teams. He was like kind of like a super sub for them last year. He wasn't like an across-the-board starter for them, but like if anyone ever dropped out, like, you know, you get an injury to like Evan Williams or Xavier McKinney or something, like he just fits in so many spots. Maybe we see him more on special teams this year. I think that would probably be smart with the way that the roster is right now. And then Cornelius Johnson. So they use the same, I think it's five punt rushers every single punt that the Jets had, except for one, where they subbed out Sorrell for Cornelius Johnson, a wide receiver. And he almost blocked that punt. That was the punt that Hardman muffed. So I don't know how the hell they found out that they have a wide receiver who can basically, you know, be a pass rusher off of the edge on punt team and try to go after these things. But Bisaccia found one. It's so weird. Some of these, like, special teams is so odd because you're teaching defensive ends and linebackers how to pass set for punt protection or run block for the kickoff team or a wide receiver to, you know, basically rush the passer on the punt return unit. Like, so it's nice to know that he can do that. Maybe he's a call up that you can have, you know, off of the practice squad, like we mentioned. If you're short on defensive end type of bodies,
if you thought Bill Melton to corner was going to be a hot one, wait till next year. Cornelius Johnson at defensive end. We're going full steam ahead. It's just everyone's moving to new spots next year. It's going to be amazing.
Yep. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I got on special teams. I don't think there was stuff that was super duper interesting on that phase. Jamin Johnson, I think, played pretty well in special teams, but then like some of his movement stuff on the defensive side, like he looks like he's a year away still from being like an NFL player. Again, I don't think you need to roster a sixth linebacker on this team, not with the current roster. I do the Hopper thing. Like, he might have had the best night of any of the linebackers. Like, he might have outperformed McDuffie and Simmons. So, I don't know. I'd like to see more of him. So,
look at the change in heart with Justice for Tyron Hopper.
I'm willing to admit I'm wrong.
I know. It's just a beautiful thing.
I wasn't a Kobe Wooden guy either, and he looked pretty good on defense, and he's gotten a lot bigger, and he's actually playing nose tackle. Like, they said he was actually going to play nose tackle.
It's funny because so many people have wanted to cut him on like the 53 man stuff, and maybe he still does. We'll see. But like, I've been watching him in mini camp and TAs and training camp and stuff like that, and they've given him this new spot and he's put on weight. And I'm like, be careful. Like he's looked better and at times has been higher on the rotation than Carl Brooks. I'm really interested in Carl Brooks. Like I love my guy, Carl Brooks. He's kind of my guy, but he's had a very, 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 very quiet offseason. I think he could be the guy. I think so.
They do a lot of weird things with him on special teams too, because like he's a defensive tackle, which are usually just like complete and total zeros on special teams. You're not going to play him anywhere, but he's athletic enough that he can do some of the defensive end stuff. So like they need him on like the punt rush team. And
yeah, I don't think he's like going anywhere either, but just wish he was a little bit more impactful. But he's got some time to go yet. Hopefully he's just saving it all for the season. We'll be right back. All right, a couple quick ones before we get you out of here. Anyone that helped or hurt their 53-man roster case the most in this particular game for you? I like Mecole Hardman feels like the obvious one that hurt himself the most in this game, but anyone outside of that?
Well, I mean, like Heath didn't have a good game. Monk didn't have a good game, but I don't know if like their status, like Heath probably a little bit. Monk's making this team. Yeah. I thought, you know, Kalen King looked solid in the slot. I thought it was interesting they used him and Ballantyne both in the slot. You know, before Ballantyne ended up getting hurt and stuff like that. So like, I don't know, maybe they keep six of these guys. Right.
It kind of, either that or if it kind of feels like an either or with Ballantyne or King. I don't know that you can keep, unless you're keeping an extra one, I don't know that you can keep both, but that also is an interesting one.
I'm throwing Haddon in there too. Yes. It's like maybe, you know, keep two of the three or whatever. I think he helped. I'm trying to think like both of the backup DNs, if you count that, Kingsley and Igbari and Brent Cox, both of them made plays. So like, I don't know. Again, the special teams of it all, whatever. But like they both made plays. They, you know, some people have them both on the roster, some people don't. I think Chris Brooks just like getting all of the snaps with the ones is a good sign. Like I don't really think he's at risk. I'm literally going position by position now.
John Fitzpatrick continues to impress. He had that nice catch.
I think he's like a I just think he's going to make the team, right?
Lock him
Katano Ladapo, I guess, if you thought that Omar Brown was going to push for his spot. One interesting thing, I guess from like a roster construction standpoint, like Amar Johnson, if he can actually be that guy who you want to give carries to and you can figure out any way how to get him on special teams or something like that, I don't think he has to make the 53. But I think he can be a reason why you only keep three running on the 53, and then you always have him as the break in case of emergency option off of the practice squad, right? Where it's like, oh, we only kept Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd, and Chris Brooks. Marshawn Lloyd just went down with another injury. We really don't want to give Chris Brooks all these carries. Like he kind of like does a different thing for us, even though, you know, on the roster, he has the RB
very important next to him.
You know, Marshawn Lloyd gets hurt in, week N. And then in week N plus one, we bring Amar Johnson as a call up off of the practice squad. Like, I think that makes a lot of sense.
If Amar Johnson is the Costco brand Emmanuel Wilson, it really does actually hurt Emmanuel Wilson, I think, because I'm right there
for
with
sure.
you. Like, if he can be like the off brand version of that same thing, and you can just keep, you're getting that back on the practice squad, then you just release Wilson. Hope that you can also get him back on the practice squad. And some reason, if you don't, even gets claimed or he signs with a different team's practice squad or whatever. All right, we've got the off-brand version of that at home anyway. And he's younger and he's cheaper and we'll be totally fine. Like, I think that does actually hurt Emmanuel Wilson potentially.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how they kind of like deploy these guys next week, right? Especially with, Matt said that they don't plan on playing the starters against the Colts. They plan on playing the starters against the Seahawks, right? Because Abanikanda basically got like all the reps with the twos. So I'm hoping to see Amar Johnson with the twos.
I was expecting a change at that at practice today, and it really didn't seem that way at all. It felt like Abanikanda still got the primary reps ahead of Amar Johnson. So
are we doing anything with Abanikanda? Like, are you moved by a bit? Like no. He looked fine. He had the drop that sucked. Enough with the drops on this team. He got all the kickoff returns. He got all the carries with the twos. But, like, I don't think this guy's making the team.
I think he's a beautiful really – he's another beautiful practice squad guy to have. This guy's still 22 years old. He was a, you know, phenomenal athlete. 22. He's 22 years old.
I feel like he's been in the league for, like, 2 years.
He has. He was 20 all when right. he came out.
Okay. He's, all right. That makes 20, sense then.
23 in October. He turns 23 in October. So if you can get him on the practice squad, he's a beautiful developmental guy, huge RAS. You can see the like physicality and speed that he has, the burst. I don't think that he has any particular role, and I kind of just like some of the other running backs better. I really liked him coming out of college a lot, but if you can get him on the practice squad and just store him there as a developmental running back, I would absolutely love that. But I don't think he can find his way into the 53 at this point.
Yeah. I like Amar Johnson. Hopefully he's our preseason stud and we can figure out how to get him on the practice squad and don't have to use a 53-man roster spot for him.
I liked what Maggie Loney said yesterday. She said, like, we were talking about him probably not being able to make the 53 or whatever. And she's like, well, he announced his candidacy is what he did in that preseason game. Like, I'm announcing my candidacy to try to get onto a 53. And he probably is going to come up short, but I do like that he announced it nonetheless. And I like that very much from Maggie Loney. All right. The last thing I want to ask you about. You have an article titled Packers Analysis, Pump the Brakes on the Preseason Doom and Gloom. We went through, I think, a lot of the things already that you had in your article, but kind of just ending where we began today, what gives you the feel of like, hey, there's not anything outside of, again, maybe the drops that you are really concerned about at the moment?
Again, like on the defensive side, they gave up a touchdown, right? It's Isaiah McDuffie getting stuck at first down marker when he's right there on a bang bang play. Edrin Cooper slips, hits all fours on a play action. Isaiah Simmons gets caught in a play action play and it has the wrong assignment. You can fix that with a conversation. And then a coverage snap where you never call that situation in that spot of the field, especially against that quarterback, right? And then you don't give up another touchdown for over two quarters with the first and second team.
Despite being in some bad situations.
Some very bad situations. So on the defensive side, right? Like, I'm not throwing baby out with the bathwater on that one. Offensive side, the drops are bad. We gotta fix the drops, dude. There's no way. There's no way we're doing this again.
Malik Heath had a bad
one. We don't fix the drops. That wide receiver coach is getting fired.
Malik Heath had a bad one today in practice, by the way. 2 minute drill, 30 seconds left. And Jordan throws, it's high, but in his hands. And it's, you're at the 30 yard line, 30 seconds left. Beautiful route by Heath to get open 20 yards down the field. He's going to catch it. They're going to get down to the like 9-8 yard line. And you're going to spike it. You're probably going to have 2-3 chances right from inside the 8-yard line to go and win the game. And instead, he drops it, and the rest was history from there.
We got to fix the drops. Monk looked bad. That killed a lot of drives. I guess if you want to be worried about Monk, go, like, you know, it's your right? This is a free country. Go do it. But outside of that, I'm not super worried about, you know, any sort of common threads.
I'm with you. I'm 1,000,000% with you. I lied. One very last thing. What did you think of Belton and Morgan really quick?
They looked a lot more comfortable. I think Morgan handled power a lot better than he did on family night. Again, that one rep against LVN got shown a lot, but he missed time to punch, and you can't miss time to punch when LVN's in a wide nine because that guy is building up steam very quickly, and he's 270 pounds. So I thought that was nice. His feet were always good. It was always just about, you know, time of that punch and functional strength. He looked a lot better from that perspective. And then Belton looked a lot more natural too. He had a pancake on the 39-yard touchdown with Amar Johnson. He just completely dirted, I think it was a linebacker on that play. So thumbs up. Both seem like they're improving. which is probably the best information that you could get out of the game, is just that line is going up on two high draft pick tackles.
Love it. And that was one of the best takeaways from that game for sure. There were some young players. Like I was talking about this, if you could handpick some players that you were hoping to see play well in that game, Matthew Golden, Baron Sorrell, yeah. Anthony Belton.
Golden looks legit, man.
Yeah.
His hands are so good for
Jordan Morgan too. Like young. You actually had some like players that you were really hoping to play well that actually did bizarrely play well in a game that not much went well.
Hopper's another top 100 pick who,
yep.
You know, you kind of throw out there. Wooden was what, a fourth round pick? And fourth now you're pick? Starting to see big returns out of him. So, yeah, I mean, shout out to the coaching staff for developing these guys, because these are certainly not the same dudes who came in. Like, they've gotten actually better at football, which is not
look at this.
What happens everywhere.
We ended with beautiful good news. That's perfect. That's a perfect way to end this one. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. You're always a wealth of information, and I can't wait to pick your brain all season long on all of these wonderful things. And as we get closer to the 53-man cutdown, we'll debate. We'll figure out a bet for six defensive tackles beforehand. But
name the hat.
Barring injuries, eat a hat. All right.
Name the hat.
I have plenty of them. I can spare one for sure. Where can we find all of your incredible work, Justice?
AcmePackingCompany.com, as always. We'll see what I have cooking for the rest of this week. But I wrote, buddy, if you want to learn anything about the Packers special teams, any of the film breakdown stuff from the Jets game, I stopped working basically at like 3 o'clock in the morning on Monday. And before then, from like the moment the game kicked off, was just like, burning through Charting film, away. Going through spreadsheets, writing stuff. Like that was it. So
beautiful. You're a genius, and we cannot thank you enough. Follow him on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find him at acmepackingcompany.com. You find me at Andy Herman NFL, and of course right here on the Packaday podcast. That's going to do it for us today, but until next time, and as always, go Pack go.